Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. I am John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. Today's guest is someone that I saw speak at Chris Tucker's Tropical Think Tank earlier this year. The conference was truly life-changing for me. I made some really inspiring friends and amazing connections, and if you're looking to step up your business game in 2015, I would strongly suggest attending the event next year. I'll put a link to it in the show notes at hacktheentrepreneur.com. I not only saw today's guest speak, but I talked to him a lot about my then soon-to-be-released product, Velocity Page. His insights were invaluable to me, and I'm so glad he agreed to join me today to share his knowledge of business, because this guy knows his stuff. His first business was in the personal development space, where he wrote a book in 21 days and managed to get it distributed digitally to 77 countries around the world. A year or so later, he teamed up with another entrepreneur to create the Become a Blogger brand. Within the first 2 weeks of launching this business, it had over 10,000 subscribers and a healthy $20,000 a month income. From there, he launched yet another business, this one in the magic niche, with a local magician. The business was an instant success, and its videos on YouTube have now had millions and millions of views. Due to all of this YouTube success, he decided to build a brilliant service called Splashio, focused on helping video content producers reach bigger audiences. He also has another video service that he just launched called V-Roll. He has spoke on stages around the world sharing his knowledge of business and video marketing, and he's going to join us today. Now, let's hack Gideon Shalwick. Okay, welcome to the show, Gideon.
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
So let's get right into this, Gideon.
Sounds good.
As an entrepreneur, can you tell me specifically what you do that you think other people maybe don't that has been a big contributor to your successes so far?
You know, it changes all the time. So it's one of those things, I guess, that it varies depending on the situation. And maybe that is something that I am quite good at, is being able to change quickly when the situation demands it. And, you know, I think that's really necessary, and especially today's day and age. You know, the common saying is the only thing that stays the same is change. You know, what's that? Only constant is change, or something like that, right? So there's constantly change happening, and maybe that's been one of the key things I've been good at, is being able to change very quickly. You know, I've set up many different businesses over the last 8 years, and some of them did well, some of them didn't do well. But also being able to change quickly and to have focus when you change and make that next thing very successful, I think has been key. And it's allowed me to jump on a new trend very quickly and take advantage of it even before everyone else.
Did you have to teach yourself to like be adaptable and be able to learn how to change? I know it can be hard, right? Especially if you're trying something like in a project and you want it to work and you want it, but then there's a point where it's like, I gotta change. I gotta do something else. So is this something you've had to work?
Yeah, at? I mean, another phrase I really love is, necessity is the mother of invention. And, often in my business, the way that I move or the way that I change is in relation to necessities that come up, you know, issues that come up. You know, hey, I want to do that cool thing. How do I do it? I have no idea. And then I have to change, you know, internally. I have to change my brain. I have to challenge my brain to learn a new skill or to do a new thing or get engaged in a new trend to be able to do that. And, it's often brought about by outside factors, which is cool. So I'm not sure if it's something that I was born with, or even something that I've intuitively, maybe it's something I intuitively just learned, but it's been kind of probably driven by surrounding forces. I guess there's a caveat there. Talking about this change thing, the ability to change does not necessarily mean you jump from one opportunity to the next. That's not what I'm saying, because that's the other thing that I think I'm really good at also is focus. Once I've decided on something, I really focus like a madman on that thing until I'm good at it, until I'm really good at it, and then I move on. So I just wanted to make that point. You know, it's good to be flexible, but also at the same time, that focus aspect of it is, I think, something that's definitely helped me and where a lot of other people perhaps have fallen down on.
Actually, a great clarification to make. So 8 years you've been an entrepreneur and been in business. So with many different businesses, many different projects, can you tell me when it was in your life that you realized that you were an entrepreneur?
It wasn't until quite late. And, you know, sometimes depending on, you know, as you go through your career, your entrepreneurial career, you constantly doubt that, you know, especially when you have a failure, you go, oh man, is this thing really for me? I remember in the first 6 months of starting a business, I had a good success. It was a pretty cool success. I wrote a book, got distributed to 77 countries, I think, and all digitally, of course. And you know, I was on the king of the mountain, right? So I was really quite happy about that. Then I ran out of traffic, and the business kind of didn't get any more sales. And of course, you can't just have a business based on just one book, you know, as your only product. So it took me about 2 years to really figure out the entrepreneurial game. And during those 2 years, it was pretty tough, you know, because I had, you know, three or four kind of failed projects. I didn't look at them as failures. I look at them as stepping stones. But certainly during that time, I doubted myself as an entrepreneur and constantly had self-doubt and asking these questions of, oh man, should I have stayed in my job? Funny story to illustrate this. When I quit my job, I told my wife, Tinika, I said, look, if I can't make back my salary that I was earning within the first year of being an entrepreneur, then I really don't deserve to be paid that much. And I think I was only getting paid, I don't know, something like 55,000 was my salary back then. And so the first year, I thought, okay, cool, nice challenge. I only have to make like 55,000 and I'm sweet. And I think I made about, 10,000 and I spent 11,000. So I made negative 1,000 in that first year. And at the end of the year, I was sort of looking at my wife and going, yeah, so about that thing that we talked about, you know, perhaps I don't deserve to be making $55,000. And it was a bit of a wake up call. It really was. And, you know, changing from the employee mindset to an entrepreneurial mindset was certainly, you know, quite a big step for me. But it was fun, you know, and I finally eventually figured it out.
Can you tell me why, or like, tell me how you decided though? Like you say, if within a year, if I can't do it, you explain it to your wife. Like I've had to explain these things to my wife myself. It's hard to do, and it's something you want to really do and follow through on. But then you completely, I mean, you can call it a failure if you want, but it's not really. It's a stepping stone to greater things. Sometimes you just have to go through these years of, there always has to be that first year in business, right?
Yeah.
So how do you decide though? Like, can you tell me the thought process that goes through like at the end of that year, like maybe I should just go back? Because I believe you were working for like a decent like tech company before that, right? Like you had a good job. You could probably work your way back into that sort of place if you wanted to.
Oh,
right?
That's if I really, 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 really wanted to. But otherwise I wouldn't, not at the moment. and I think it the reason would be more because of psychology than anything else. You know, I think it's been so much fun, being able to work for myself and to be so creative and to express myself through my business that being able to, or the, just the thought of going back to a job would is quite, quite a challenge for me to even think about. I mean, the original reason why I wanted to start a business was, number one, I felt that I was constantly creating an asset for someone else that I'd never own. And that was kind of, you know, soul destroying in a way. And, you know, even the job was fantastic. It was a fantastic job. Nothing wrong with the job. I just felt that, you know, damn it, I'm working so hard here, but the day I would leave here, which was inevitable, you know, I wouldn't have any piece of that asset. That was the first thing. Second thing was the day I'd stop working would also be the same day that my income would go to zero. And I also didn't like the prospect of that, especially, you know, thinking about if I keep on doing that until I'm whatever, 55 or 60 or whatever, you know, your income is not really secured, you know, if you get fired or whatever. And the third one, which I think was probably bigger than everything else combined, was my creative outlet. You know, I found it difficult to express myself in a job situation where, even though it was a fantastic job, my employer, they were just the most lovely people you could imagine. I still felt restrained, you know, because every time I wanted to do something, there's always other people to consider and, you know, ask permission for and blah, 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 blah. And whereas as an entrepreneur, you know, you get an idea, you just go do it. You know, you don't have to ask for permission. it's more like you do it first and then ask for permission later. And so that's been the massive change for me. And I think that was probably the driving thing for me to get out, to drop out of the system, so to speak, and to start my own business.
Let's move on to habits if we can. And you say you have the ability to focus like a madman. I find just talking to people now on the show is that your morning routine really kind of sets your day for a work day. So could you walk us through, say, the first 30 minutes of your work day and how you can set yourself up and align yourself up to focus like a madman?
Okay. So that's probably another area where I'm a little bit different. I'm not a morning person. I don't have a morning routine. I'm more of an afternoon and evening person. And I don't have a routine. That's the other thing about me. I don't really have a routine. The way I get stuff done and the way that I've – the only way – perhaps I'm just weak, but the only way that I've found to not lie to myself as an entrepreneur when it comes to deadlines – is to essentially create event-based success. And what that means basically is where I would, you know, specifically set up event-based milestones that would guarantee my success. So for example, if I wanted to promote a new product, I would set up a live event on YouTube where I invite, 30,000, 50,000 people to join in on a specific date, and you know, I have to be ready. I have to be ready, otherwise I've got egg on my face. Another example is when we launched V-Roll, for example, we said, hey, let's go and attend the VidCon conference, where, you know, all the biggest companies go for YouTube, and there's like 20,000 people there. It was 18,000. It was a lot of people anyway. And so let's go and release our first version of V-Roll at VidCon. And so once again, it was a deadline-driven event that created this inevitable success. Eben Pagan talks about it a little bit as well. But, you know, that forced me and the team to get ready no matter what. And, you know, we couldn't lie to ourselves. I mean, you could lie to yourself, but it doesn't matter because you can't lie to your audience if they're expecting it. So when it comes to productivity for me, I found that if I set deadlines that I am the one accountable to, then they normally don't happen. You know, I normally don't get the thing done because I would get close to the deadline and I go, oh yeah, it's getting kind of late. I'm tired. You know, my rest is more important. Blah blah blah. And then I say I'll do it tomorrow or, you know, I'll do it next week. And, you know, it's just me. No one's going to notice. And I've done that so many times in the past. And then what happens then is basically you just push out your deadlines like crazy. Whereas if you've got this this deadline that you committed to, you've got to deliver. You have to deliver. And that forces you in a way to become successful. And so I found that really useful. Obviously, that's not the only way I get stuff done, but it's certainly been a major way for getting things done. So I very much have a milestone-based or event-based philosophy for getting stuff done right now.
Excellent. I love that. And I've actually, now as you're saying it, I do the same thing. Mm. I didn't even really realize I do it, but if I don't set that date for launching this new project or new product, if that date never gets publicly announced, it just never seems to happen.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think we're all the same as human beings. We all have this built-in fear of scarcity thing or fear of missing out or fear of being rejected by others, you know, and so when you set up the environments, you know, that where that fear can be realized, somehow your psychologist kicks in and you go, I have to do this. I have to make this happen. And it's quite a stressful way of doing it, but it's a guaranteed way of getting success. But the caveat with that, once again, there's a caveat with everything, is that you gotta watch your health. You know, I went through a stage where I just set too many deadlines, too many event-based deadlines. And it was terribly exciting and a lot of adrenaline and extremely awesome. But then I didn't even realize that because it was so exciting, but I got quite burnt out physically. And I got really sick, you know, I got like this massive flu thing and I was out for a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, you know. And so I think as you do this, pace yourself, you know, when you set dates for events, pace yourself, you know, so you don't do it perhaps not every week, but every, you know, spread it out a bit.
You got to be reasonable with yourself, but you got to push yourself a bit, but
Oh yeah, sure.
You have to also pay attention. So it's interesting you say how you're not a morning person, you don't have a routine, yet you are an entrepreneur doing amazing things. And I think it's a key thing for people to know that you don't have to be like up at 5 a.m, the hustle guy, always on and like work that day. Was this hard for you to admit to yourself that you can do like run your business and start your projects and with something that's kind of congruent with like Gideon himself?
Yeah, you know, it's changed also over the years, I must admit. It hasn't always been the same. When I was just getting started, you know, we didn't have children. We have a little four-year-old girl now, beautiful little girl. And that certainly changed our routine quite a bit. You know, I used to wake up in the morning, 6 or 7 o'clock, and get right into it immediately, you know, and I'd be so excited to get into it and I wouldn't waste any time because I loved it so much. I still didn't have a specific routine, you know, I would just get into it and then figure out what's needed for the day and just do it. And then often work till 11 or 12 that night. Well, I say work in a very light way. It's more like play, really. I wouldn't do it if it felt like work. But then next day, the same thing, you know, and but now with children, it's a little bit different. You know, I try and spend a bit more time with family. So mornings are reserved for spending time with family. And then, I don't know, around about 9 or 10 o'clock, I might get into it, you know, and see what the day holds for me. So there's no, I don't have, the only sort of routine that I might have now is because of the event-based things that I've set up. And that they, you know, I'm setting up some regular event-based things that force me to get stuff done, and that in a way is a routine. But it's what's cool about it is it doesn't require any willpower from me, you know, to create a new habit or anything silly like that. Because it's an event-based thing, it you know, psychologically it forces you to get it done. But yeah, it's I think over the years it's changed. And I think that's the other key thing as well as an entrepreneur. Part of it, really a massive part of it is just getting to know yourself and getting to know, how you work best and what gets you into that flow state. You know, that's the other thing. Flow is huge for me. And it's combined with this deadline stuff. Is you know, you got to get yourself into the flow state, and as often as possible, because that's when you do your best work. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not really a morning person because it takes me a while to kind of wake up and then to, you know, figure out what I'm going to do. And then, you know, but once I get into that flow state, boom, you know, it goes crazy. Actually, I do. I lie. I do have some routine, John. It's not like. Oh yes, it's Sunday night now, and you know, every Monday morning at 9 o'clock, I'm gonna do this, and at 10 o'clock, I'm gonna do that, etc. It's not like that. It's more like I have routines, like rituals. It's probably a better word for it. Where if I want to get into a flow state, I have a ritual or a routine that I go through. For example, if I need to write a script for a video, or if I need to write the outline for a course, or if I need to create a presentation, or if I need to come up with a creative concept, it's critical for me to get into that flow state. And so what I do, I have a ritual. What I'd often do, this is one of the things I do, is I'd go to my favorite coffee shop, or one of my favorites, there's a ton here where I live. Go to one of my favorite coffee shops with my MacBook Pro and my black journal book without any lines, and a pencil and an eraser. Very important. No lines, pencil and eraser. That's, for me, it's a critical thing for a journal. And then I go and sit there. In the coffee shop, I have a nice coffee to get my brain going. And I turn on some trance music, often vocal trance. And the key thing there is it's very similar to Baroque music, which is at a certain rhythm, and it gets you naturally into a very alert phase. So I turn that on with my earphones on, so it blocks out the outside world. There's normally nobody that I know there that can bother me and interrupt me. And so it's just me with my coffee, my trance music, and my MacBook Pro and my journal, and that gets me into flow. And once I get into that flow, some of the ideas I come up is just crazy. Yeah, it's really awesome. So I do have some sort of a routine, but it's more like a ritual really than anything else. It's because it just happens whenever I want it to happen.
I like the wording of ritual actually better than routine. I might actually use that from now on.
Awesome.
So I'm interested with how you choose to do a new project. So you have V-Roll now. You guys worked at it for a long time. It's a product / service, which is very, very cool. And it will all be on the show notes for everyone to check out. And you can explain it a bit more for us. But I do want to know how V-Roll comes about, how V-Roll comes across like your plate, or the idea gets brought to you, or you come up with it and you just decide that this isn't just a shiny object. This isn't just me getting distracted. This is me staying focused in my business, and this is what my business needs now. Mm. So how do you do that for a new project?
Okay, well, first of all, I have this thing called a hedgehog concept. I have two kinds of hedgehog concepts. I've got a personal one, and then I've got a business one. The personal one, once you've figured it out, doesn't really change. But the business ones, they're often kind of clones, but with a variation of my personal one. So the hedgehog, are you familiar with, do you want me to go through what the hedgehog concept is?
Yeah. That'd be great.
Okay. So it's from a gentleman called Jim Collins, who wrote a fantastic book called Good to Great. He came up with five principles for success, or how to be a great company as opposed to just a good one. It's such a cool beginning of the book. He starts with good is the enemy of great. I just love it. but anyway, he found these five principles, and one of them was the hedgehog concept. And it's basically from the story of the hedgehog and the fox, story going that, the hedgehog is only really good at one thing. And for example, when the hedgehog gets attacked, it just puts out its little spikes, and nothing and nobody can get to it because it's, difficult to get through those spikes. The fox, on the other hand, he's very cunning and very clever, and he tries many, many different things, but he never really quite becomes very good at any one thing. For example, one day he tries to attack the hedgehog, and he jumps from the top, and the hedgehog just rolls into a ball, and the spikes come out, and the fox can't get to him. The next day, the fox is a bit more cunning. He thinks he'll come from the side. Same thing, boom, he hurts his nose on the spikes. Third day, he thinks, all right, next, I'm going to be really clever now. I'm going to dig a hole underneath and get to the hedgehog this way. Same thing, hedgehog notices and just rolls into a ball. You know the rest of the story. So the moral of the story here is that there are two kinds of people in the world, or businesses as well. There are foxes and hedgehogs. And the hedgehogs are the ones who found their one thing that they become extremely good at. In fact, they become so good at it, they become the best at it in the world. Whereas the fox, on the other hand, it's kind of people who, just try many different things and never really become good at any one thing. And so with me, I have a hedgehog concept within the video space, within the video marketing space. And so within that hedgehog allows me to have many, many different business hedgehogs within that same space. So V-Roll is simply really just an extension of my own personal hedgehog. The way you find your hedgehog, just to be more practical here, is a combination of three things. Is what you're truly passionate about, what you can become really, really good at. So it's a skill-based thing. And thirdly, how you can make money from it, or as Jim calls it, your profit breaks. So where those three things kind of overlap in a Venn diagram type of drawing, that, you know, that's your hedgehog concept. So your passion, what you're really good at, and what you can make money from, where they overlap, that's your hedgehog concept. So I think there's value in having one personally, and then also as an entrepreneur, using that to spin off, so to speak, hedgehog concepts for your businesses. So I've got three businesses, and they're all three in the video space. There's an educational business where I teach people about video marketing. There's a video production business, which is, you know, helping people with making the videos look great, and splashier business. And then there's the V-roll business, which helps you with video advertising. And so all three of them are within the video space. And so whenever an opportunity comes my way, just to come back to your question, how do I decide when an opportunity comes my way? How do I figure out whether I should do it or not, and et cetera, et cetera? Basically, the short answer is, or the question that I ask is, does this fit in with my hedgehog concept? Does this help me grow my hedgehog concept and make it even stronger? If the answer is yes, I would either do it now, or if I'm not ready now, I'll book it in for later. And if the answer is no, I just don't do it at all. And that actually simplifies my life a lot, because it's very easy to distinguish between great opportunities and just the good ones.
And yeah, I think it's true. I haven't actually read Good to Great, but I'm going to read that.
Great book.
Because that sounds great. Yeah, I like the idea of having, just sort of having a way to, because lots of opportunities do come, or ideas come to people, especially as entrepreneurs, right? We're always coming up with ideas, or people are telling us ideas. And you can get stuck just going from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And I guess if you have that hedgehog concept, then.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know what's key here is also with all the three businesses that I have at the moment, they're all contributing toward each other. They're all supporting each other and cross-promoting each other. And you know, one thing I do in one business benefits the other business quite often. And the reason why it works that way is because it's all tied to my personal HR concept. And so I think that's critical. And like you say, if you don't have the HR concept, then it's so easy to jump from one opportunity to the next, because every new opportunity that comes your way is a shiny object that new opportunities always look more exciting than your current opportunity. And it's extremely difficult to say no to them. And this is a really nice way I found as a tool to help you figure out how to say yes or no for these new opportunities. And it works like a charm.
Okay, Gideon, let's move to doubts and to fears. One of our biggest fears, I find, as entrepreneurs and just as human beings, is being wrong or not knowing the answer to something. But it's essential, I think, to our success and our growth as entrepreneurs. Can you walk us through how to be wrong?
Oh, that's a tough one, because I'm never wrong, you know.
That's the answer I was looking for. Wow, you're the 20th guest, I think, or 19th guest, and you're the first one. That's awesome.
All right, you gotta be different, right?
Exactly.
I'm plenty wrong. So the question is how to be wrong and how to
because it's a fear we all have, right? Yeah. We all want to not do something and have it fail, not do something and look like a fool. But we have to accept that is a definite, definite possibility as we go into new projects and pushing our boundaries of our businesses, right? Yeah. So how do you push your business? How do you push yourself to do things knowing that there's a good chance you are going to be wrong in a lot of it?
It's an interesting one. I don't, in general, try to think too much about what can go wrong or how I can get it wrong. And maybe that's a weakness I have. But I do often team up with other people that you know, can find plenty of things wrong with the idea. So it pulls me in line. Yeah. But I am naturally more of an optimist. And so that's why I sometimes bring in people to bring me back to earth a bit. But, you know, just to come back to that psychological thing of this fear of being wrong, you know, and it really stems from this eternal fear of rejection for us as human beings. We have this inbuilt thing, it seems, from birth, that we are extremely scared of being rejected. It's the it's almost the worst thing, you know. And that's why public speaking, for example, is such a big deal for people. I think there was a survey done a while ago. I'm not sure about the truth of it, but it sounds kind of true that you know, a lot of people are more scared of public speaking than something like burning to death by fire or something stupid like that. You know, which you know, I'm not sure how true that is, but it kind of sounds real, because it is a real fear, that fear of rejection. You know, because you get on stage, for example, and you've got all these people looking at you, and you know, what if you just say the wrong thing, or what if you forget to put your pants on and you're on stage half naked? You know, it's just, you know, I'm not sure if you.
Is that a fear you've actually had?
I've had a dream like that before. You get on stage and you realize, oh, geez, I've only got my underwear on. But, you know, it stems from that fear of rejection. And it's a tough one. But I think what is cool about it is that we all have it. I'm not aware of anyone who doesn't have it. If they say they don't have it, then perhaps they're just suppressing it really well, if they've managed to figure out a way to deal with it really well. And I have found some sort of a shortcut to it, which is really, really good. And I learned this from Stephen Pressfield. He wrote that tremendous little book called, now I can't remember the name.
The War of Art?
The War of Art.
No.
Yes. Yes, that's the one. Yes. Where he talks about a similar thing. I can't remember his exact words. Well, it was a while ago and I read it, but it was along the lines of, you know, everyone else is just as fearful as you. And you worry about your own problems way more than anyone else. In fact, no one else probably even knows or cares about your problems or your fears. So why are we so fearful? So when you realize that you know, you're the only one that's really worried about it, it kind of eases the pressure a bit. That was really useful for me, that little book, reading that and sort of realizing that, saying, hey, everybody is actually just as fearful, you know, and just as kind of screwed up in their own little way.
It is a great book. You actually introduced me to that book, and I read it. I've read it twice now, and
you can try this for yourself. I mean, if you're you can do the extreme experiment where you get dressed up in a really, really ridiculous outfit, and you go walk in the middle of a really busy busy area, like in the middle of the city. And you know, some people would love that. They just naturally love the attention they would get. But some people would be like horrified, going, "Oh, I'm getting, you know, everybody's looking at me." It's quite a nice experiment to run, because in that moment, for the people that are around you, they might notice you and go, "Ah, that guy looks kind of funny." But 2 seconds after they've passed you, it's like, "Oh yeah, what time is it? I'm on to my next meeting." And they don't even remember that you were there. And so, but you're still agonizing about this funny outfit. You know, and I mean, people even act like that when they're best in their, you know, just normal clothes as well, of course. But it's a nice little experiment to whenever you feel like that, to go, "Hey, actually, no one, you know, people have busy lives. They have their own worries and their own fears to think about." You know, it definitely eases the sort of the load there in terms of that. But I think that certainly stems, you know, a lot of other fears are based in this fear of rejection.
Have you always had this like complete, like, just not being scared of being wrong or being embarrassed?
I'm totally scared of being wrong. It's the fear of rejection is huge for me.
you seem so natural on stage when I, like, that's how I was introduced to you on stage. Like, you were speaking and you seemed like the most natural person there and just like you're loving it, having the best time
of your life. That particular presentation, I was very fearful of that one. Very fearful of rejection because it was about a year since I did my previous presentation. And so I was very fearful of my content. I was, you know, because I was off the grid for a while and I was not in that particular topic as much anymore. And I was asked to talk about that topic. So I had to sort of do a lot of research and it took me forever to prepare for that presentation. I was really nervous for that one, actually. But I think part of it is also just freaking doing it. And okay, sure, you have the nerves, you have that fear, but... And you just do it, and afterwards you feel a lot better, and you go, oh, no one even noticed, you know. So and even if they did notice, they're not going to care 2 minutes from now. So and you can apply that to yourself as well. You think, how often do you worry about, or do you care about what other people look like, or and even if you do care about, you don't care for that long, right? So, I'm trying to think of something really embarrassing that happened to someone else, and I can't even think of. Something. The most ones I can think of are those ones on YouTube where someone falls over a piece of wood or something, you know, and everybody laughs and it's funny. But then, you know, 2 seconds later, you move on. You don't care. You don't even remember who that person was. So I think it's a nice way to sort of play that rule in yourself and go, hey, everyone is the same, actually. If you do something embarrassing, they're just going to move on anyway. Who cares?
Excellent. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Gideon. Can you just leave us with where people can find out more about you and your business?
Sure. I'm not sure which one to mention now, but if you want to follow along with my education stuff, where I might have, you know, free updates of what I'm up to with video marketing, it's just if you go to my name, GideonChalbeck.com, that's my personal blog. If you want to see my latest business, that's with video advertising, that's vroll.com, VEEROLL.com.
Excellent. And I'll put links to both of those on the show notes for everyone.
Wonderful.
So thank you so much, Gideon. This has been a lot of fun, and I'm glad I got to finally get you on the show.
Yeah, it was heaps of fun, John. Thank you so much.
I'm so happy that I got to share that with you. But it was longer. It was longer than usual. So let's get right to it. Let's get to the hack.
And there are two kinds of people in the world, or businesses as well. There are foxes and hedgehogs. And the hedgehogs are the ones who found the one thing that they become extremely good at. In fact, they become so good at it, they become the best at it in the world. Whereas the fox, on the other hand, it's kind of people who, just try many different things and never really become good at any one thing.
And that's the hack. Oh, I'm so glad that he shared that. I couldn't even have set it up any better. But Gideon, when I met him about 6 months ago, at the conference in the Philippines, he introduced me to this concept of the one thing. And I didn't even at that point hear it explained as the hedgehog concept, but that one thing and how it's actually the reason why I have the first question in my interviews, which is, what is the one thing that you do that you feel others don't, that has been key to your success? Because I think it's key to understand as an entrepreneur that we don't have to be good at a whole bunch of things. We don't have to be good at all things. We don't need to be good at that many things. We can be good, each of us, at one thing. And if you're really good at that one thing, whether it's sales or networking or putting together a team or coding or whatever that happens to be, graphic design, it's the one thing you're good at. And you can surround yourself with a team of other people who are good at their one thing too and build amazing, truly world-changing things out of this. So don't focus on being good at everything. Really focus on being good at your thing, finding what that thing is and just honing that thing in and being confident that you only have to be good at that one thing. So thank you so much for joining me again. I really, truly appreciate it. Again, stop by the website, hacktheentrepreneur.com, and please join my mailing list. You'll see the subscribe button at the top, a big yellow one. Hit it. Give me your email and yeah, let's have a conversation. I'll send out an email once a week with my best hacks that I come up with these amazing conversations I'm having. And you can reply to any of them. Have a conversation with me. Ask me questions and let's chat. That's what I'm here for. And it's what I love to do. That's why I've started this show. So thank you so much. This has been a great time and I look forward to hanging out with you guys again. Until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.